Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Simon on the morning, 3 a.m. So, I picked up a little bit of an echo. Okay. Good evening. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in my little hidden studio somewhere between the Rocky Mountains and the Sawtooth Ranch in Idaho. And on the other line is with me, of course, my occasional guest host and actually just co-host, Russ Avison.
As hello, hello, and I definitely am just occasional.
Well, you're once a month occasional, so. You're like the monthly drizzles that come in and leave.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
So how's life treating you out there, Jimmy?
Well, you know, it's every day is a baby step towards getting better, so I'm just working on it as well.
Okay, but it's better, definitely, yes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, much better than it was, let's say, the first part of June. So, I have this leash I hang around with me now that's hooked to my nose, so I actually can breathe. And my dog, of course, we all know Bella is my dog, follows me around like a puppy, and she always makes sure now that she finds the hose before she lays down. On the hose.
Really?
So, yeah, that's just her way.
Is she trying to tell you something?
Yeah, I think she is, but well, we have a very interesting program tonight. I have to say, I wrote something a little while back when we published a book. Tuscany Bay published a book called Pluto, and it was at the end. It was a little word from the publisher, and I'm going to read you the top paragraph because it really pertains to this book we're going to be talking about tonight, partly. I don't pretend to understand science fiction. The truth be known, most of the time I think science fiction is a contest to see who can come up with the weirdest scenarios and most assuredly the weirdest names. So there you have it. And it certainly fits in with tonight's guest. Well, let's just get her on board here. V.S. Holmes is an international best-selling SFF author. I'm going to assume that SFF stands for science fiction.
Fantasy.
They write Neil Bentley books and a Reforged series. Their debut, Smoke and Rain, won the New Apple Literary's Excellence in Independent Publishing Award in 2015. They also work as an advocate for disabled and queer representation in the SFF worlds. So, without further ado, please welcome to the Writer's Block, V.S. Holmes.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun.
I'm one of Mickey's authors on board. Of course, Mickey is your publicist, Mickey Mickelson at Creative Edge, and he is mine as well, and a great guy. So we'll be hearing from him a little bit later on. Okay, let's get into this. The book we're gonna, or actually the book that that we're going to be talking about a little bit tonight is Smoke and Rain. And it's oh my goodness, it is a mouthful, it's a handful, and it takes a while to get through it. I think mostly Russ and I agree that it's following the names And you know, some of the names in this book are a little odd, but they're science fiction. And it's following. You have a whole bunch of them, and I have to know this, V. When you're coming up with names for your books and your stories, do you just sit down and like make them up as you go?
to some extent, there's definitely a little bit of method to the madness. Not usually at first. When I'm first getting to know these characters and stories, that's usually where the nicknames start. And then, you know, as I get to know the different cultures that I'm creating, I get a little bit more into different conventions. You know, what sounds or what letters certain cultures use more than others. And then, yeah, a lot of times it's just hitting the keyboard and say, well, that looks all right.
You know, and I thought it was just that you had a Scrabble board. You just threw the letters out there and grabbed a few and said, okay, there's a good name.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, there's definitely that. There's, you know, sometimes I'll see a road sign and be like, oh, if I rearrange those letters, you know, there's definitely that. And sometimes I just like the way the sounds sound together. So it's not quite as magical as sometimes it might seem.
Ah. But I get that certain words, certain sounds really either play well in your ear or roll off the tongue nicely. I remember I always have liked the sound of the word appendectomy. I have no idea why. I just like that sound. So maybe you could create a new character in your next book from appendectomy.
Let's call him Appy.
Cattywampus is my favorite.
So. Cattywampus. Yeah, that's a good one too.
Cattywampus. So why don't you, excuse me. I'm give our listeners a little bit of a background on this story, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, no problem. So Smoke and Rain is the first in the Reforged arc in the Blood of Titans world, which has gotten quite out of hand. It started out as one novel, and now, you know, we have 12 planned.
Wow.
But it's sort of touching on the classic fantasy, like, oh, heroes use epic battles, but I wanted to explore what happens when those heroes are just as screwed up by the events that they're living through as the world is, because I think that's a more realistic take on these epic fantasy battles. And so I wanted to sort of dive into that and the psychology behind war. It follows these three characters who are sort of caught in the crossfire of this war that seemingly has nothing to do with them. And then, of course, as the story goes on, things come to light.
Okay. It's an interesting story. It certainly is. I don't even know if I had the right word for it. The dichotomy of the some of the characters stand out a lot. And then you've got some characters that it's kind of hard to tell the difference between them. So, I mean, but yeah. I'm not too sure if that isn't all of science fiction or what are your thoughts?
Well, I definitely, you know, I wanted to get into some of the more morally gray characters. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's who most of us are, as much as we might like to think we're the pinnacle of good. And, you know, I wanted to get into that. And so I have a lot of those characters where it's like, I don't know if you're a good guy or a bad guy. And I don't know if you know either. And that's something that I really enjoyed getting into, especially with the later books, because we have these more heroic characters, and then we see what happens to them a little bit later on and how things change. So.
Well, I've noticed that you don't introduce a character without giving them a name. So almost everybody in this book has a name.
Yes.
And it is Russ and I talked the other day, I think possibly yesterday, about how sometimes it's kind of hard to have to go back and find out what this guy's name was, and then you have to remember it because it's going to come up again. And then you kind of have to go back and look and see who he is. So, but I have found is science fiction all over the place. So,
You know what I found?
I found it was interesting that I got to a point where I just sort of went with the flow of the book and I didn't worry as much about the characters. I mean, there were a few that stood out.
Right.
Here's what I told Jim the other day when I was reading it. I said, to me, this seems like what it would be like if I was reading a Harry Potter book or a Lord of the Rings book. However, I have never read any of those books.
Right.
But this is kind of what I imagined it to be like.
Yeah,
both of those are pretty big names, so I'll take that.
Well, my comment was it reminds me somewhat of Star Wars, in the character development and the interpersonal relationships between the characters. They're not softly stated. They're out there, and I like that only because you know where they are and you know where they're going. And even though you can't remember their names, bravo. I mean, it's quite an interesting read.
Well, thank you. It's funny what you say about the name, because I just recently was working with an audiobook narrator, and of course he required all the pronunciations.
Sure.
And you know, I read some of my pieces out loud, but you know, I don't do it probably as often as I should. And so he asked for all these pronunciations, and I had to sit down and be like, you know, I honestly don't know how I pronounce this name. and a few times, you know, he came up with a few pronunciations that, you know, like that's actually better than what I was picturing. So that was a really fun way to look at it, especially, you know, years after I've actually written the book. Now I'm sort of revisiting these names. Like, I don't know that I named that character and they're dead 3 pages later. So
I have to ask you, you said that, you know, you wrote this several years ago, and what started out is to be a single novel is now going to be a series. I think you said of 12.
12 within the world. The series itself is just the first two books, which is Smoke and Rain and Lightning and Flames. And then there are two more books that sort of come in about 20 years afterwards. And following some of the same characters, but focusing on some newer ones a little bit more. And
all right.
Yeah, it started out as a standalone, but got away from me.
Right.
Yeah. So how did you get into this whole genre in the first place? I mean, it's to me, it's very foreign. I've not read anything like this. So it was, as I've told Jim, we've been doing the show, for over 5 years now. And
right.
One of the things that I find that has really, I would say, improved me as an individual and my view on things is the fact that at least once a month, I have to pick up a book that I probably never would have chosen myself and have to read it. And I don't know that I ever would have read this book had I not had to, but it's really opened up my eyes to something completely different. So how did you get into this in the first place?
Well, I never wasn't, I guess, would be the shortest answer. My dad was a huge fan of science fiction and fantasy. You know, he read Lord of the Rings when he was a young adult and then read The Hobbit to me when I was very small. And so it was just always a part of my literary world. My mom is much more sort of traditional literary fiction, historical fiction. My dad's, you know, off in left field is Contact and all sorts of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really that first got me interested. It was just what I was exposed to. But then I'm always interested in how things work and how things are put together and these big what if questions. And with a background in science, you know, I sort of naturally gravitated towards the science fiction and the fantasy. And then as I worked to sort of include more representation in my work, you know, with queer and disabled communities, science fiction and fantasy is a great way to kind of imagine where we're going, places that our world maybe hasn't gotten to yet that we'd like it to go. And that sort of naturally gravitates towards these imaginative worlds. So,
mm-hmm. Well, interesting.
It gives you a great opportunity to play with the future and play with things that don't exist and possibly will exist. And it's It's got to be kind of fun for the writer. I personally don't write science fiction. The only really thing I have to do with it is when we have to read the book here for the show, or my publishing company is doing one right now. We're doing a planetary series. So I get to format and edit some of that stuff. And so, I mean, I kind of get into it that way, but I can't tell you how wonderfully happy I was that this was not a romance novel, because
yeah, we've had our share of those.
The last 7 weeks we've had six of them. So it's like, wow, basta. Yeah. Enough is enough.
Yeah, there's definitely some romance subplots that I work in, but it's not ever the focus. At least this series.
Well, a good story, I think, has to have some romance, some type of romance in it. It doesn't have to be stated; it can be understated. But you know, it kind of gives you a different depth to a personal relationship, but not the whole book.
Yeah.
So.
I'm just curious, who are some of the authors that you've read that have influenced or inspired what you've done?
That's a good question, Russ.
Well, definitely at first, Tamara Pierce. She writes middle grade and young adult fantasy. And her book was actually the first time I ever saw a character who looked like me in a book. And that sort of changed my entire mind about what I could write and how I could write. And I realized that I could write people who looked like me and acted like me. And so that was probably my initial inspiration for really writing and writing what I wanted to. And then as I, you know, took it more professionally and actually started doing it as a job, definitely V.E. Schwab. Her work is amazing. And Patrick Rothfuss, I really like the lyrical and sort of unreliable narrator stuff that he works with.
We're going to take a real quick break right here. We need to take a little word from LA Talk Radio. Hey, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything on that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is a .com and they have it all, from music to sports to self-help, but they even have talk. So why don't you sit back in your favorite chair, put your feet up, tune into LATalkRadio.com, and give us a listen. Guaranteed to be fun for you, and we're coming at you right now. And thanks, J. Michael. It is now 7:16, and we are on the phone with writer V.S. Holmes, and her book, Blood of the Titans, is remastered, and we have, good Lord, what the hell was the name of this book? Help me out here. I just had a brain fart.
Smoke and Rage.
Smoke. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you.
Okay, V, I want to ask another question here. Because you mentioned V.E. Schwab is one of the authors you look up to. And first of all, any influence on your name versus hers?
Amazingly, no. I actually found her work probably a year after Smoke and Rain came out.
Ah.
It just sort of happened. My pen name, it is my initials, my actual initials, just sort of rearranged and a little fictionalized. So yeah, when I found her and I'm like, oh, another V, this is really exciting. You know, it's always entertaining to find someone who has your same name, and let alone your same initial that they're publishing under. So that was kind
of cool. Well, plus you're both redheads.
Yes. So I believe hers is Blood of My Enemies Red, whereas mine seems to be more of a burnt safety orange.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'd prefer that over, you know, Blood of My Enemies. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. It requires slightly less upkeep.
Well, guys, you know what? I'm sitting here and I'm just getting sicker by the minute.
Oh, Jimmy.
I'm going to have to bail on you. Russ, if you wouldn't mind finishing the show for me.
Of course not. Of course not.
And oh my gosh, it's just like, I don't know if anybody told you, V, but I just spent like 3 weeks in the hospital. And
oh, I'm so sorry.
And so I'm trying to recover, and I go through good days, I go through bad days, and today is just not a good one. So
I totally understand.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to turn it over to you, Russ. You guys have a great show, and we'll be talking the next day or two.
All right, Jimmy, feel better.
I will. Thank you so much.
Okay. I think Jim's probably going to find out that his dog Bella is laying on his oxygen hose again. That's the whole problem.
Yes, that could be a factor. They try and help those dogs. They do.
So with you were when you gave the description of your book, I think to entice the readers a little bit more to get them to understand what it is, can you like give a thumbnail sketch of the of what the story is about? Because I think that's something that will really bring reader or you know potential readers into this. And obviously, I mean, besides the fact that you have a passion for this, that's there's no doubt when someone reads your book, they're going to know this is it's a labor of love. I really believe that. But I you were trying to sell books too, right?
Yes, I mean ideally.
Yeah. So give us a little idea more about the story itself.
Yeah. So it starts out, we first follow Armin, who's a young sort of jeweler. He used to sort of grow up on the streets. Now he's trying to make his life, work. He has a girlfriend, and their whole town is kind of rocked when these women, who they're the Lian, and they are the people who created the gods. So if you sort of think back to like the Greek myths where there's the Titans who created these gods and they're more powerful, but also more archaic, same sort of idea. They arrive in their town and they're being pursued by the gods' army. So the gods have now overthrown them and basically committed genocide. And of course, you know, as their numbers dwindle, so does their power. So they're hiding out in this town, and Armin, this jeweler, he's helping his mother take care of a few of them who have been caught in battle. And the town divides over, well, should we keep these people safe or should we not? And as time goes on, Armin realizes that what they brought to their town, even though it is, you know, their legacy to protect these people, might have actually brought destruction on them. So it follows him and then one of the survivors of this massacre, Alia. And sort of across enemy lines, there's Bren, who is a lieutenant in the God's army. So we also follow him as well on his crisis of faith as he realizes what they're doing and the consequences.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's really a conflict that's brought up right in the beginning, and how they're trying to wage their war, but still they have to take into consideration the people there. I do notice that they do refer to them as humans. Is this supposed to be because they're human-like? I mean, because it obviously doesn't take place on Earth, or doesn't seem to.
Right. Yeah, it's, I mean, like a lot of fantasy world, you know, we have the classic human races, then there's the gods, and then there's some sort of fringe humanoid races like the Nenev or the Ageless, who are these really pale, sort of almost colored people with horns that live in the Arctic. And they live very long. They have industrial technology. And then there's another race, the Asai, and they live in the forest. And they're a little bit more analogous with elves, but again, not quite. So I have the humans and then these humanoid races that kind of act as a backdrop.
If obviously when you write your book, you write it in English, but would the languages that they speak, do you imagine them being an English type language? How do you see it?
To some extent, insofar as English being kind of a conglomerate of various different languages that have influenced it. So they speak a language that many people speak, but a lot of those cities or countries have their own sort of more formal ancient language that they use. But then trade is spoken pretty much universally.
I see.
But yeah, it's kind of like English. I mean, I hear it as English because that's my first language. I have not gone so far as to write grammar rules or anything like that for some of these languages, but I definitely have an understanding of certain words mm-hmm. that, you know, in certain cases they might want to speak. So, but no.
Well, it's interesting. I've always been a Star Trek fan since mm-hmm. the days of the first Star Trek. And it was amazing to me, though, how some people got so wound up in it that they actually they created this Klingon language, for example. And yeah. there are people that can speak Klingon, which is a made up language.
Well, it's one of the options on Duolingo. I found out when I downloaded it recently. I was looking for Spanish, and Klingon was one of the options.
Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. There was another. Fantastical language on there too, but I can't remember what it was. I don't know if it was Tolkien's Elvish or what, but.
Mm-hmm. So I want to touch on something that's a little more personal for you. And that is that when you talked about your, when you started to write and that you saw some other writers that looked like you and I've seen your picture and you're an attractive young lady. I mean, I didn't quite follow what you were saying by that, but what was the tie-in with some of these other authors that gave you the courage maybe to go ahead and write the things that you really wanted to write?
Well, it was definitely sort of less superficial, though the character, Alana, did have short red hair, so that was kind of cool. Which, you know, and being redheaded was something I was teased for a lot in elementary school. So that sort of added to it. But for me, it was really not fitting in, not being a girl in the traditional sense that people wanted me to be. And so there was that. And then as I got older, it was the people I was attracted to and how I wanted to present myself. And so that was really... I think what was most powerful was finally seeing characters who were like that, who were queer, who were tomboys, that sort of thing, who kind of balked against these traditional roles and tropes, because that wasn't really something that I saw a lot of. It's definitely much more prevalent now, which is fantastic. But
yeah,
growing
in fact, I was going to ask you about that, because when did you start writing the first book?
Well, its first iteration was written when I was 12. Thankfully, it is pretty much completely different now. There's maybe one line that survived. But yeah, it's been the story itself has been in the works. Its current iteration was probably about 4 or 5 years before it was published in 2015.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, our society has changed a lot since then too. And it's probably been a welcome change for you and made it easier for you to move forward in the direction you want to go.
Yeah. I mean, we have a long way to go, but it's definitely wonderful to see so many people saying the same thing and looking for the same types of books, and also looking for those characters in stories that aren't just about that type of identity or loving those types of people. It's really refreshing to just have stories where it's like, oh, this person is casually queer. That's kind of delight. So,
and that it's not an outstanding point about that person. It just happens to be that that's who they are. And
exactly.
Yeah, and I think our society is a lot more accepting of that now, too. You know, I don't know how old you are. I'm not going to ask you, but my guess is I'm close to twice your age. And to see the changes, for me, it's been really welcome. In fact, this is something that, and this is, of course, not on the sexual realm, but I remember when I was, I graduated high school in 1971, and I just found out in the last year or two, I had no idea of this at the time, but women were not allowed to get credit cards or loans or buy a car without their husband's signature. Even though this is not, you know, right, it kind of parallels in a way just the way we view individuals in this world today as they did then. And it blew my mind.
Well, in my middle school, so around this time that I was discovering Tamora Pierce's books, the middle school I went to in sixth grade, they had a project. It was a private sort of hippie school. Hippie is not quite the right word, but
no, that's a good one. I like that.
I think they would have been more understanding had they actually been like kind of a hippie dippy school. But at any rate, we had a woodworking project where the boys all made swords and the girls all made keys. I think that symbolism is pretty obvious, mm-hmm. Even if it wasn't quite as clear when I was in sixth grade. And I was furious because I wanted to make a sword, and they didn't understand why it was a problem. And we had to go through the whole effort of making a petition. And this is like right at the end of the 90s, like making a petition so that girls could make swords and not, you know, thinly veiled references to chastity belts.
It is so ridiculous. Wow. Hey, you know, I want to take a break here for just a minute. In fact, V, listen, I want you to imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. And it sounds like a perfect vacation spot. It is for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you're going away for a one- or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. And when your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. I'll bet you're all ready to go there all the way from your side of the country over here.
Oh, yeah. Well, my dog's ready to go, so.
Yeah. What kind of dog have you got?
He's a lab Roddy mix, so he looks nice. Basically just like a very jacked lab.
Oh, very good. What's his name?
His name is Rory. It's a reference to Doctor Who, so another.
Oh, okay. All right. That one I get.
Oh, good. Okay.
So tell me, I want to know a little bit about your process when you go to write. You know, you said you started when you were about 12 as far as writing goes. But now that you, as you noted, you have this job as being a writer, what's a normal day for you like? How do you proceed with your process?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think I'm still trying to figure it out. my process, I finally realized my process is very different when I'm writing science fiction than from when I'm writing fantasy.
Okay.
That's been really helpful to me because fantasy for me takes a lot longer and I'm a lot more inclined to kind of just wing it. Though I definitely outline, I go through multiple outlines. Mm-hmm. So I am a plotter, but it's constantly changing. You know, I'll have a revision process where I'm revising the outline halfway through drafting the book. And, it's just sort of, I think, a way of organizing all of the chaotic thoughts I have. And
well, it is. I don't want to say the book is chaotic because it's not. But I can see where someone who really was going to sit down and study this book, you would have to keep a journal to keep track of everything that's going on.
Well, I did. Have to. especially because the most recent book just came out at the end of July. No, end of June. What month are we in?
July. Listen, it's so hard to even know what day of the week it is. I was sitting here yesterday thinking, it must be Saturday. No, it was Wednesday.
Yeah. I have no concept of time anymore. Yeah, so it came out on June 27th. There we go. We've got the date. Mm-hmm. And when I was going through that, because that book was really wrapping up a lot of the loose threads that were started in Smoke and Rain. And I had to go back through and look at all of my notes, not just like, oh, how did I spell this name again? But, you know, where did I last leave these characters? You know, how is the reader going to remember them? Because I remember them in a totally different way. You know, I see much more of them than the reader does.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot more information to go on. So that was quite the process of running a curry comb through all these things. But I've definitely been leaning more heavily on outlining lately. I think partially because I'm knee deep in both my series. You know, I'm working on the fourth in my science fiction series, and that sort of necessitates organization, at least for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's definitely a lot of that, but yeah. It changes.
Do you have a goal every day as far as how much writing you want to do? Do you want to do a page a day or 3 pages a day, or do you even approach it that way?
Yeah, when I'm on deadline, I do goals. I found typically later on in a project, going by scenes works better for me because I'm able to feel like I actually completed something at the end, and I'm not so bogged down and like, oh, well, was it 500 words or was it 1,000 words? So there's that. But when I'm just trying to get it out, so right now I'm on deadline for that fourth science fiction book, Heretics, and that one I actually am trying to hit a word count goal. And it's usually 1,000 to 2,000 words a day. I try to be gentle with myself when I don't, like today, when I don't actually hit that goal. And I do try and give myself breaks, but I do also have a day job, and so wedging word time in isn't always easy with that. But I try and at least have a goal to think about the work or mm-hmm. work out a plot knot, even if I'm not actually sitting in front of the keyboard.
Gotcha. What is your other job?
I'm an archaeologist.
Oh, you know what? I recall reading about that. Tell me a little bit about that. Does that tie in with your writing at all?
Yes and no. So Nell Bentley is an archaeologist, though she works in academic archaeology and I work in contract archaeology. So I definitely draw inspiration from that. A lot of the really wild stories that Nell or her coworkers tell mm-hmm. are pulled somewhat directly from my own coworkers or myself or antics. So it does influence that. And I get to travel to some pretty cool places, some really rural areas, and meet some really interesting people.
Uh-huh.
And that, I think, really helps because seeing the spectrum of humanity is incredibly inspiring.
It's inspiring. That, even in today's world, you still find that?
Yeah, this is like my most controversial hot take, but I have been so filled with hope for the past few months because of all of the incredible communities I'm seeing come together. Obviously, there's a lot of awful, terrible things happening, but I'm trying to cling to that hope. So,
wow, what a great attitude. I love that.
It's not every day. You got me on a good day. There's definitely the, you know, staring existentially into my coffee.
So you have this series of books now. If I'm correct, you have three of them already out, and then there's a fourth one on its way?
For the sci-fi series?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so there's three books, and then also a little short story that you can actually read for free on my website if you want to, and or you can just grab it, it's for sale too. And that's Nell Bentley's arc. And I definitely have plans to revisit the world with some other characters, but mm-hmm. I haven't gone there yet. It's just sort of back burner projects to keep my brain entertained. But there will be a total of six books in Nell's arc.
Now, how do you determine that it's going to be six books? That's always puzzled me. Whether it's television or like I remember hearing the creators of the show Lost, and they said mm-hmm. they always knew the opening scene of that show, and they knew the ending scene of the show, and it was just the arc of how they were going to get there. But they always knew how it was going to work. And I'm watching now this show called Yellowstone, and they've said, oh, it's going to be six seasons. They already know what they're going to do. How does that happen that you know this is going to be six books?
Well, I think the secret is by the time we bother to tell you, we figured it out. I didn't always know. Travelers, the first Neil Bentley book, was just like Smoke and Rain, originally a single book. Mm-hmm. And I apparently don't know when to quit. So I kept thinking like, oh, well, what if she did this? And, oh, well, what if that happened? And when I'm driving to different archaeological sites, I have very long commutes. You know, we're talking like 3 to 4 hours.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of thinking, a lot of alone time. And that's usually when I am spitballing those ideas. And it was over the course of one 6-week project. And all of my commutes were just filled with, well, what if Nell did this? Or what if her girlfriend was actually not from Earth? Well, what if, and it just got completely out of hand. And then I realized sort of the rough beats that I wanted to hit with mm-hmm. all of these different what if questions. And I boiled it down to like, okay, well, we've got six main things that we really want to touch on here. And that was the six books. But there's a reason why they did it.
Oh, okay. So you take this main concept that you want to discuss, let's call it, and then you build around that and you say, okay, well, I can make one book out of this idea because I've got enough to put together to how this develops. And then you pick the next one and then you say, okay, and by the time we get to this last one, we are going to solve this mystery of these people all the way through till they get to the end, which is what we want to do is show how they move on and fade into the sunset.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that. I figured that out by myself. You know,
yeah, I think
go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of it is just having read and watched, just consumed so many different stories. You know, we get to know, well, this is how long it'll take for me to tell this particular story or a story that's similar to this one, because it's how long it took them to tell that story. And it, you know, once you get used to it, and once I got to know how wordy my writing would get, I could ballpark pretty easily.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess it's like anything else. You get enough experience at it and you understand how the process is moving along.
Mm-hmm.
One other question I have now. You're working on a particular book right now?
Yeah, I'm working on, I have two main projects and one outlining thing that I'm doing.
Okay, so tell me about the outline. That's interesting. So are you outlining an idea that you have, or do you have a story already and you're just kind of laying out the path that it's going to take? How does that work?
Mostly the second one at this point. I have, so this is also in the Blood of Titans world, but it's sort of a deviation from where we've been. It's a bit more flintlock fantasy. So that has the industrial technology that I mentioned earlier. So we got steam engines, we got revolvers, and I'm also sort of moving to a different continent in the world. So I'm outlining that, and I'm really excited about it because there's also dinosaurs. I kind of just went completely off script and wanted to add some prehistoric beasts. I think that's the history, archaeology person in me. So wow. I'm mostly working on that. It's pretty rudimentary right now. I start with a table and just put in whose point of view it is, because like you noticed, I jump point of view quite a bit. So I'll put in whose point of view it is, and maybe one line, maybe just three words about what has to happen in that scene. And sometimes I don't know. At this point, most of it's blank. but I like you said, I have a lot of scenes in the beginning, and then a couple scenes at the end that I just know have to happen. And we'll figure out the middle at some point.
You know, it almost sounds, you've seen in like detective stories where they're trying to figure out a murder or You know, maybe it's the Mueller when he was trying to figure out the Russian tie-in with the election. And I can see them having pictures and notes all over the wall and red strings attaching all to them. And you kind of do that sort of thing to lay it out to see, okay, well, here's how this works. And it probably triggers new ideas every time you look at it.
Oh, it does. It does for sure. And so it's funny that you said that about the crime scene detective thing, because I always joke that archaeology and writing are exactly the same, because you're just trying to find out the story. You're trying to find out what happened. Mm-hmm. And so one, you're digging in the dirt and you have to deal with bugs and sunscreen and poison ivy and angry landowners. And then the other one is a much scarier landscape of your own brain. So.
That's probably the toughest part.
Oh, yeah. It's the madhouse in here.
Well, B, we have to take a break for just a moment. You hang with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
All right, thanks. We will be right back. You're listening to The Writer's Block.
You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.com. Dot services.
Well, you know that name very well, don't you?
I do. I love Mickey. He's awesome.
I have not met him myself, but Jim always speaks highly of him. If you're just joining us, this is The Writer's Block, and we are speaking with V.S. Holmes, author of Smoke and Rain, which is part of a series. And, you know, one thing that you probably figured out is the name of the show, which is called The Writer's Block. And the question we ask every author, have you ever had it?
Always. Definitely. I definitely have. I don't usually think of it as writer's block. I'm kind of a problem solver. The what if questions, I guess, is sort of a hint at that. I always want to know what's going on. So usually when I start to get blocked on a project, I step back and try and look at why. Often it's that something isn't clicking with the plot. You know, there's just something that's not working, and I just need to step back from the project and get that big picture. Like you were saying, when you have the whole plot laid out in front of you, and every time you look at it, you see something different. It's
right.
Definitely that, you know, I have to sort of go back to that square one. But oftentimes too, when it's like real writer's block, I find it's probably depression, stress. And that's definitely been a factor, you know, working a lot, or, you know, having a really stressful, project or something going on with my family. I just can't find the energy to write. Luckily, I haven't really had a block that lasted more than maybe a month, at least to my knowledge, when I was really trying to focus on a project. But usually I think there's some underlying thing. It's not that I don't believe in writer's block, because obviously we all suffer from it. But
sure.
for me personally, it's usually either something's not working or something's not working in my head.
Do you have a lot of these, what I would call an aha moment when you're plotting your books and writing? Do you have like, you kind of maybe getting a little stuck, or you're starting to paint yourself into a corner and you go, aha, this is where it's going to go. Does that happen a lot?
I wouldn't say a lot, probably not as much as I'd like to, but definitely. usually, it happens the most maybe in the first third of working on a project, and then the last third of the creative part of working on a project. You know, we're not talking like revisions and editing.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, I've had a few, and luckily I have a wonderful writing buddy, and she knows, like, a text at midnight for me will be like, oh, I figured out the plot knot with so and so, and it turns out like they're enemies, they're not friends, and you know, she'll always be excited for me. So that's good. Wow. I think half of the epiphany joy is being able to share it.
You mentioned you used the word editing. I know we weren't talking about it, but that brings something to mind with me. How close is your final book to what you started with? And I know a lot of that is because of revisions and, of course, editing.
Well, if we discount like the 12-year-old me version,
right?
Because please do. If if we discount that, I would say the bones are the same.
Mm-hmm.
The meat is pretty different. It's a different flavor, different cuisine, and a lot of the superficial details are probably very similar. I did add some more Russian influences with the Nation of Atherlon, and I changed a few sort of key emotional or psychological scenes for some mm-hmm. of the characters, because I realized that they wouldn't actually act like that. The biggest change really was with one of the main characters, Alia. I was having writer's block. I was having a really hard time getting to know her and really get into her head. And I realized I think part of it was because there were some things that I had to write about with her that I wasn't really comfortable exploring in my own head yet. So that took a bit, and that really changed the tone, I think, and the flavor of the meat of the story.
Well, it seems to me too that if you really talk about getting into one of your characters' heads, which really is nothing more, I would think, than an extension of your own head.
Oh, for sure.
And so this has got to be the writing has to be a very fulfilling endeavor, because I would think you discover so much more about yourself as you move forward.
Oh yeah, I mean the whole writing is therapeutic thing is definitely true, but I think on a deeper level there's a lot of exploration that goes on, and you know, it's a little bit like playing dress up. You get to try on these personalities, these characters, these sexualities, maybe genders, and you get to do it in relative privacy. You know, unless if someone's reading it, unless if you're posting it on Wattpad, the moment that it's done, you know, it's private. So you can really have the freedom to explore yourself. And I think that that's really, really valuable. One of the projects that I'm working on now is completely different from anything that I've written style-wise. It's still fantasy. And I'm learning so much about my own writing voice and who I am now versus who I was when I started writing as a career. And that's been really incredible. And it's really fun to know that, like, even after 8 books, your voice is still changing.
Sure. You know, you might write a book about your journey.
Maybe.
It sounds like an interesting story to me. I hate to say this. Oh, I do. But I hate to have to say this, V, but we're out of time. This has gone by really fast, and it's been very fascinating. I didn't know what it was going to be like chatting with you, because, like I say, the book was so foreign to me as far as what I've read in the past. And I have to say, I've thoroughly enjoyed the book. And now that I've had a chance to talk to you, it makes the book even more intimate with me. I really enjoyed all of this. Why don't you tell people where they can contact you, where they can find your books, and, you know, because we want to sell a few of them for you, too.
So you can find my website at vsholmes.com. And I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, VS_Holmes, and Goodreads, all of those sorts of sites. You can download the ebooks from Amazon and all the other digital retailers. You can also pick up paperbacks. Support your local bookstores if you can. And actually, Smoke and Rain, as of today, is out on audiobook via Audible and iTunes, which is super
exciting. Fantastic. I was just going to ask you about that. That's congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I got the email probably like an hour ago, so that was exciting.
Wow, you should have announced that at the beginning.
Well, save the best for last, right?
Right.
So the audiobook's out. If you want to see if you like my work, if you're, not familiar with sci-fi fantasy or just me, you can download a free sci-fi short or a free fantasy short, or if you'd like both, you can do that from my website. And I think that's it. Oh, I also do a podcast of author interviews if people are into that. So that's the Amphibian Press podcast.
Wow. You got a lot going on.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know how to relax.
Well, someday you will, right?
Someday.
Although a friend of mine used to say, you know, live fast, die young, and leave a good-looking corpse.
I don't know about that last bit, but I'm trying my best the first two.
Well, V.S. Holmes, it has been a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for joining us on the Writer's Block tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast.
Oh, great. Thank you. And Jim should be hopefully with us next week. Jimmy, you feel better. And for all of you out there, thank you for listening. And we will catch you next time.